From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, ancient artifacts in the Southwest. Gary David joins us. Looking forward to that. Here's what's happening. A month after announcing its biggest single recall ever, Toyota has now revealed some new quality problems that will force it to make safety-related repairs on, get this, another 2.8 million vehicles, including the very high-profile Prius hybrid models. The news could deliver a further blow to the Japanese giant's image, despite being landing on top of the latest Consumer Reports automobile reliability study. It also puts Toyota in a position where it is again vying with Japanese rival Honda for the dubious distinction of having the most vehicles of any manufacturer recalled in the United States this year. All kinds of problems there. Well, here's a story coming out of the Israel area. Hamas has said that an Israeli airstrike in the Gaza has killed the head of its military wing in an attack on a vehicle. He's the most senior Hamas official to be killed since an Israeli attack on Gaza 4 years ago. He has long topped Israel's wanted list. His son also reportedly killed in the airstrike. Ryan Murrow, the founder of WorldThreats.com. Ryan, is this the beginning of something bigger? What do you think? What do you hear?
That's what the Muslim Brotherhood is saying. You see, the difference between now and 2009 is what's happened in Egypt and the Arab Spring. There wasn't as much incentive for the actors in the region to get involved. But now what the Muslim Brotherhood is saying is that this is not 2009. Egypt has changed, and Israel needs to recognize that, and we're not going to sit by and do nothing.
All right. We've also been talking, Ryan, we have talked with you about the possibility of Israel and Iran. Is this something that could just engulf that entire region?
It actually could, because it's definitely in the interest of Syrian dictator Bashar Assad to have a conflict with Israel right now, because he believes that that's what will unite the population behind him. Iran has similar interests. Especially, of course, because they want to destroy Israel. And so this does have the potential to really expand here, and that puts the U.S. in a very awkward position because we've been trying to reach out to the Muslim Brotherhood, and that's about to go up in smoke.
All right, Ryan. Ryan's website, of course, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. An outbreak of the hospital superbug MRSA, you know that horrible bacteria, has been brought to an end by United Kingdom doctors cracking the bacterium's genetic code. An incredible story. They say it's the first time rapid genetic testing has been used to track and stop an outbreak. One expert said that this soon could become standard practice in hospitals where MRSA is all over the place. Doctors were concerned after MRSA was detected in the United Kingdom in 12 babies just during routine screening. A toddler with a very rare genetic condition can't stop smiling. Little Elliot Elan suffers from what is called Angelman syndrome. It's a chromosome disorder that causes severe learning disability, but it puts a permanent grin on your face. The little two-year-old appears happy all the time. He smiles, laughs as a result of the genetic condition. He's in the United Kingdom. Now, if you happen to live next to a dog that barks a lot, I'm sure sometimes it frustrates you. Listen to this. Okay, so how would you like to hear that all night? No, you probably wouldn't. But some people are resorting to this. Animal welfare activists are all upset, a debate now, whether or not the practice of devocalizing dogs and other pets is inhumane. Devocalizing animals involves surgically altering the pets so they can no longer make these loud noises by removing some of the most of the animal's vocal cords, either through the mouth or the larynx. So there's a big problem there. An amazing story is astronomers have spotted a rogue planet wandering the cosmos without a star to orbit 100 light years away. Recent findings of such planets have suggested that they may be very common, but candidates have eluded close study. The proximity of the new rogue planet has allowed astronomers to guess its age at a very young 50 to 120 million years old. Peter Ward, of course, professor of biology and earth and space sciences at the University of Washington in Seattle with us. Peter, this is a great story, the fact that this planet's out there roaming around all by itself. How do you think it started? How was it formed?
Yeah, this is probably another example of cosmic billiards. In fact, we predicted that these types of events should have happened many times. And what happens is you get a really big, bad planet like our Jupiter. It really is the big bully of the solar system. It has so much gravity that just in its elliptical circling of the sun, if it comes anywhere near another of the planets, it can destabilize that other planet's orbit if it's close enough. And we really think that any planetary system, when they begin, have these great big Jupiters that then migrate inward. They really are the bullies of the solar system backyard and playground. Two things happen. Either, and this is all theoretical, two things have always been thought to have happened at least. Either the planet, like our Earth, gets pushed into the sun and burns up, or, like in billiards, it gets hit by gravity and pushed out of the solar system to float through space. Now, when I was a kid, that's a long time ago, my favorite book, made into a wonderful George Pal movie, was When Worlds Collide. I think it was Philip Wiley, published in the middle 1950s, when two planets come out of the void, and one hits Earth, and the other becomes a second Earth. But here it is, rogue planets coming without a star, just wandering through space. Theoretically, we've always known it can happen. This is for the first time we've seen one. It's great.
Peter, we've talked on this show before for years now about the possibility of a planet X, a planet in our solar system that is way, way out there. Does a story like this, a rogue planet, does that add to that possibility?
Well, yes and no. It adds to the possibility that there's a whole lot of stuff we don't yet know. A Planet X out there, there's a lot of good reasons to believe that happens. For instance, we have an awful lot of comets that just seem to come from nowhere. They're not being pushed out of orbit by nothing. Again, it's gravity. There's some physical presence out there that's strong enough to push a comet, and pushing a comet inward in our solar system is really bad news for any planet. We saw, 10, 15 years ago when comet Shoemaker-Levy 9 crashed into Jupiter. This is a case of Jupiter doing good things, sucking up comets that could otherwise have hit the Earth. But a planet like this coming out of space like that, a couple things. First of all, you'd think, oh, it's got to be totally dead. But this is a Jupiter-sized planet. What it really could have and probably has are smaller moons. Now, without a sun, you go, oh, that's going to be so darn cold that it could never have any heat, but that's not true. Gravity flexing the inside of Europa, this is the moon of Jupiter, it's a really cold place, but the gravity of Jupiter is so strong, it flexes the crust. It causes a thermal heat enough to produce lava deep inside Europa. You could have bacterial colonies, even on these supposedly cold, dead planets, lasting for billions of years.
That's an amazing.
To say these things don't have life is really premature. This is what's so fascinating about this. When we finally become spacefaring, which we will have to do, to find these things floating out, and I imagine we're going to find a great number of these things floating out in space.
But we can't say one thing for sure, too, Peter. If there are any inhabitants on that planet, it's very dark there, isn't it?
Boy, they would be great astronomers, though.
They'd get perfect stars up in the skies. Intention, how to use it to change your life. Up next, Tony Burrows joins us. His author, Get What You Want. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Intention, how to use it to change your life. Tony Burrows with us this hour. Author, of course, the book, Get What You Want. Co-founder of the Intenders of the Highest Good, which is a grassroots community movement with intender circles in countries all over the world. Here's Tony on Coast to Coast. Hey, Tony, how are you?
Fine, George. Good to be here.
You too. Tell me about intenders. What is that?
Well, the intenders is a group of people that is a community, a community of people who sit in circles all over the world and put intentions and gratitudes in the circles. And in that way, we're working with conscious manifestation, conscious manifesting, getting what we want. And we found that that if we get together in a circle and share our intentions and line them up with the highest good, in other words, say that in order for our intentions to manifest, that they must serve the highest and best good of the universe, ourselves, and everyone everywhere, that we've had phenomenal results with manifesting and getting things we want come to us.
What kind of things do they ask for?
Everything you can think of, George. You know, everything from the mundane to the sublime, the new refrigerators, the new mates, the new cars, the new jobs, more money, and so forth. And then also they ask to be more compassionate, for instance, more kind, more patient, or they might ask for worldly things like world peace and I intend world peace. So since there's no limit on what we can think, there's really no limit on what we can intend.
Tony, why is it so important to set these intentions?
Well, we've just found that it's wise for one of the things we learned over these 18 years of sitting in these circles is that it's wise for people to get proficient at manifesting. In other words, get good at getting that which you desire to come to you as easily and effortlessly as possible. Because if you do not do that, you remain at the mercy of people and forces outside yourself who may or may not care about you in the least. So getting good at manifesting seems to be one of the highest priorities that we could come up with after looking at this. And of course, the second priority that we ran across after looking at this for many, many years is that if we're going to create the peace and the freedom and the abundance and the joy and all the good things that we long for and that we deserve as human beings here on planet Earth, why it's wise for us to get together and come together in community. I mean, how are we going to create peace or come together as one in oneness if we do not begin to come together?
Tony, if a group gets together for good intentions, can another group get together for bad intentions and try to do the same thing?
Yeah, the highest good clause, again, is we call it the world's greatest insurance policy, George. And the people with bad intentions, they can manifest their intentions too.
Yeah,
and
that's what I thought.
So it just goes either way. And people with good intentions, they can manifest their intentions as well. So we recommend, and we would not make any of our intentions without putting that highest good clause, that in order for these things to manifest, they must serve the highest and best good of the universe, ourselves, and everyone everywhere. And that seems to take care of a whole lot of stuff.
Tony, if you had the good and the bad, and they were being bombarded at each other, I would hope and think that the good would win out in the end. Would it?
Well, that is my intention that it would. I think there's been times throughout history when, good and bad are relative terms, but there's been things in history that have shown us that the bad has had its day. But I think more and more people nowadays, George, are realizing that that they want to experience their highest potentials. They want to live fully and freely and happily and healthfully. And the way to do it for openers is to intend it.
How does it work? What makes it work, Tony?
Well, it's just, this the buzzword nowadays is it's the law of attraction, that our thoughts create our future. Our thoughts create our world. A lot of ways to say it. Our thoughts create our experiences. So it's just a matter of taking that piece of information, the law of attraction or the laws of manifestation or whatever you want to call it, and putting it to its highest and best use. And so that's what we've been doing over all these years, is sitting in these circles and dedicate our intentions to the highest good. And as a result, we've found that we've gotten more uplifted and empowered in the process.
Are we getting help from, angels or anything like that, or is this something we manifest ourselves?
Well, that's a good question. It's both, actually. We find that we are getting help from invisibles, for lack of a better way to say it, guides, uh-huh, helpers, angels, and so forth, and we do call them forth in our sometimes in our circles, but it isn't a rule that you do so, because a person can set up an intender circle and pretty well set up their own format. Either way, you can manifest with or without asking or invoking or calling forth the guides and angels and helpers, but we have found that things work smoother and easier and better if you do, because that's part of what's going on in our world today. This shift that appears to be upon us is a shift into taking us into our multidimensionality, which is communication with those invisible beings. So we're going to meet them. We might as well start communicating and opening the door.
Why the circle? You mentioned that the intenders get together in a circle. Does that have any significance?
It definitely does. Good question. The circle, the ancients knew it, and the ancestors knew it. When you sit in a circle, it puts everybody on equal footing. Everybody has equal access to everybody else in the circle, as opposed to, being on a podium where one person is up on a podium and he's preaching to the rest of the crowd and taking all the energy to himself. In a circle, the energy is equally dispersed. So we only want to work in circles. There's something magical about a circle, and we're doing our best to take advantage of it.
Well, I like that. And you said there are thousands of intenders all over the planet. How did it all get started?
Well, just four of us, four good friends. We were sitting on my girlfriend's back porch one night. Her name was Betsy, and our two friends, Mark and Tina, and we were talking about how we could help each other in our lives, George. And we ran across the word intention, and we looked it up in the dictionary, and it said that an intention was a moving toward. So we realized if we're making an intention, we're moving toward that which we desired. And so we just started putting intentions in our little circle of four. And lo and behold, they started manifesting like crazy for us. And pretty soon, five friends joined us. They found out what we were doing. And at the end of the first year, there were nine of us. And then one night, 35 people showed up. And somebody took it over to the Kona side of the island. We were in Hilo at the time.
Sure.
And then somebody took it from Kona over to Petaluma, California, in the Bay Area. And then I flew over and started giving many talks around the Bay Area. And within a year, there were 17 intender circles in the Bay Area. And it flashed across the country from there. And now there are intender circles in countries I can't even pronounce the names of. And I must tell you that the four of us who started this process, we are as in awe of what happened as anyone.
One of my friends went to Hawaii just this week. He said that he was going to be involved in something like this. I wonder if that's it.
Yeah, the original circle still going on the Big Island. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. It does work. Now, is the one just as strong as the many with intention?
Oh, my. We feel like that if you can get a group of people who are aligning with your intentions, that it does magnify and multiply the capability of it manifesting all the sooner. And so that's one of the other reasons that we do sit in circles. And I know there's been folks out there who've said that, I don't want to tell other people my intentions. I want to keep them to myself, and it's safer that way. But what we have found is that if you've got a group of people and they all use this highest good clause that I've been saying several times, dedicate their intentions to the highest good, that it's easy to support them in the manifestation of their intentions, because if the intention isn't for their highest good, it just won't manifest.
Is intention the same as prayer?
Pretty much, yes. What we found is that those who get up in the morning, and this is a key that we learned over many years, is those who get up in the morning and set a direction unto their day by saying their intentions or their prayers or their affirmations, that they get an entirely different day than if they would not do that. Things come smoother to them. The things they want in life come easier, as opposed to someone who gets up in the morning, has a cup of coffee, and hits the ground running and doesn't set that direction. Well, in that case, anything goes. So, but we don't find that that there's any difference if a person wants to say their prayers in the morning or say their intentions or their affirmations in the morning. The main thing is that they do it.
Absolutely. Now, if people want more information on just intention, what do you recommend?
Well, intenders.com is a wealth of information on how to free information, as well as a whole bunch of my books and so forth. And this latest one we were talking about, Get What You Want, The Art of Making and Manifesting Your Intentions. But intenders.com will help them immensely. And
Is this like positive thinking, or is that different?
No, it's very similar, George. A good point, because what we found is what we say is what we get. And so it's a good idea for us to stay as positive as we possibly can. And if I were to boil down in four words to what it is that we have picked up over these years, it would be envision only positive outcomes.
I love it. Tony, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM, and we'll take some phone calls with you. Tony Burrell's with us. as we talk about intention. It does work. It does work. I'll be back. And welcome back. Tony Burrows with us as we talk about intention. Tony, how different are your works, your book, The Code, and Get What You Want from The Secret or The Law of Attraction?
Well, The Secret, which was I enjoyed thoroughly, but we felt like it left a couple of things out. We were doing conscious manifesting in circles long before The Secret came out, many, many years before that. And we felt like they left, the highest good factor out. In other words, they were showing people how to use the law of attraction, but they weren't showing them that they could align it up with that highest good clause that we call it the world's greatest insurance policy, and just feel like we wouldn't want to make any intentions without it, because you're looking for trouble if you do. I've seen people manifest things that they didn't put the highest good clause in there, and most of the time they wish they wouldn't have got what they got. So that was the first thing. And the second thing that The Secret left out was the community factor. We felt like it was wise for us to begin to come together in community and do these intender circles in community. After all, we've been separated every which way you can imagine, through race and class and political party and religion and so forth. And it's we felt like it's time for us to come back together in community. And so that's why we make these intentions in circles with like-minded and lighthearted friends.
What is the Vision Alignment Project?
The Vision Alignment Project is something that happened to me about a year and a half ago. I had a dream, and I woke up in the middle of the night, and the dream, I was told to start a website, call it the Vision Alignment Project, and to write my visions of my ideal world. Just anything from the better treatment of the animals to bringing the highest good factor into business, and on and on, more conscience. And there ended up being 300 visions written in a paragraph or two or three on each vision. And then I was shown to put a big green yes, I align with this button under each vision, and put a hit counter with it, and tell folks that if you align with this vision, then you are actively and consciously contributing to the creation of this vision. It's a way for people to know that they are making a difference. And so as of last week, we are at the hit counter on the alignments is we've had 980-some thousand 900 and almost 90,000 alignments with these visions on the Vision Alignment Project, which is free, and anybody can sign up for it, visionalignmentproject.com. And so it's a way for people, again, to know that they are making a difference simply by hitting that button and adding to those visions of our ideal world.
Well, it works. Let's go to the phones. First-time caller, we've got Dave in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Dave, go ahead.
George, how you doing?
Good, David. All is well.
I just wanted to ask Mr. Burrows a question, which I've heard of this intention, these intention things. But, I mean, with prayer, we understand it's directed to God, and he's the power behind it. Who is intention directed to?
Well, the highest good.
Explain.
Highest good.
Which could be God?
Yes. You see, Go ahead.
Well, no, you go ahead.
Well, as one of the things that we realized, and it's a great question, and we realized that there's a whole lot of people out there who cannot really have the word God. That it's something that the word God has been undermined by the media, it's been undermined by our teaching institutions and so forth, and so some people, it turns them into fear, it makes them fearful, and so what we do as in our intender circles is we use the words the highest good, and we, instead of the word prayer, we use the word intention, but basically, if you really think about it, you know, they are the same thing. I mean, there's a lot of names for God, a lot of them, and this is one, highest
good. You're right, because we have on Fridays, we call it the prayer session, where, you know, people email and requests for people who are sick or whatever, and people pray for that. And I did get an email once from someone who said, "You're being religious." And I went, "No, I'm not." And I said, "Explain." And he emailed me back and said, "You know, you're praying. To me, prayer is religion." And I said, "Would it be different if I said this was our intention moment?" And he went, "Yes." And I said, "It's the same thing, just like you just said, Tony." Isn't that strange?
Yep. You hear that, you know, as an author, in all of my 9 books, I've had to deal with how do I state things in such a way as people can have them, and how can I make it palatable for them so that they can really integrate this information. And so we're always thinking of ways to say things that work just as well, but don't alienate large sections of our readership. So sure enough, the highest good, you know, most people in our culture today can resonate or have a feeling for those words, the highest good. And that's why we use them.
Let's go to Sebastopol, California. Colleen's with us, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Colleen.
Good evening, gentlemen. This is a wonderful topic. Thank you so much. I wanted to share with you some interesting successes that I had with the Coast to Coast audience.
Okay.
And also personally, and then as well as setting intentions for us all to focus on as a challenge. In 2004, when we were having a series of hurricanes through Florida, one after another, and we were thinking about how we could, as a group, maybe redirect the hurricane somewhere else, and we thought about, you know, unintended consequences. Well, I set an intention that was really specific, and that was to imagine the hurricane's power decreasing, but imagine you personally inhaling that power and putting it to use in your life. And we were having a big wildfire here. I said, let's just move the moisture from that hurricane here. Imagine the firefighters arriving calmly to dew covered hills and putting this out with, you know, no consequences. It's exactly what happened. The Coast to Coast board, my local online bulletin board, I set it out there and got it. Now, personally, I've been thinking of what can I do besides trying to get us to have a ceasefire internationally, each solstice. That's my projection for us to focus on for the future. But personally, I said, how can I influence an end to climate change, geoengineering, that's affecting us so seriously? And this Tuesday, I was at an important Board of Supervisors meeting with the former head of the water government in California and said to him, what do you think of geoengineering and climate change and what we're doing, you know, in these man-made methods? And he said, I think that's terrible. So for the first time, I've had someone important tell the truth that it's happening. Even though Bill Gates is advertising what he's doing, you know, it's known. But we need government officials to step up and say, this isn't okay. So if we can have intentions around the truth being told in ceasefires and we can manifest it. 2/3 of the states in this United States can reverse Citizens United, National Defense Authorization Act. We just have to empower ourselves, occupy our intentions, and then go sit around with your circles and manifest it.
Indeed, Colleen.
You'd be right. Can anything go wrong, though, with this, Tony? Can the intention somehow go awry?
Not if you line it with the highest good.
Okay. Well,
that's just, I was going to elaborate just a smidgen on what Colleen was saying there. And one of the things we've also learned as over these many years of working with conscious manifestation is to see our intentions as a done deal. In other words, picture the end result from the beginning and hold that vision no matter what. So, In most cases, I would ask, you know, what if people are saying, well, I've got this challenge and I've got that challenge and I've got this drama and that trauma and so forth. I would say, what's your intention around that? And then that brings them right back to finding a positive note to solve or resolve whatever it is they're going through. And another thing we do is we also do our best to see whatever's going on in its highest light. In other words, if the weather is, as she was saying, was pouring hurricanes barreling down on the coast or something like that, and you see that you just see it already turning out to sea, or you see it, you hold that vision, and you get a bunch of people holding that vision, you can't imagine how powerful that is. You can change the weather. You can change all these things by groups of people coming together and making intentions for the highest good.
What do most people want to change with intention? Relationships, jobs, career, health? What do they want to change?
You know, most people want to change their money situation, the economic situation. And and from my perspective, that they just need to intend that. They need to, what we started out was to get up in the morning and set their course of the day by stating their intention that they are abundant and they have enough to spare and enough to share.
Let's go to William, Jacksonville, Florida. William, you're on with Tony Burrows. Go ahead.
Hi, how are y'all doing? I have two quick questions, one of which is I work at night, so does that mean when I first wake up as far as the intention, setting the intention thing? And do you have people ever ask for guidance or something like that there? I'm just curious.
Yes. You can make your intentions any time of the day, William.
Okay.
If you forget to say them first thing in the morning, or if you've got a night job and so forth, just say them when you start your day. And we found that those who say their intentions when they start their day, that their day proceeds entirely different than those who do not. It brings a consciousness, an awareness to it all, and that they begin to put two and two together. They see that they made that intention in the morning, and there in the afternoon it manifested, or the next day it manifested. And one other thing that we have noticed that is very interesting is that the time nowadays, the time between the time you make an intention and it manifests, is getting shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter. And so it's just since this law of attraction, or whatever you want to call it, laws of manifestation, that has to do with our thoughts creating our future, why it's just, again, a good idea for us to set our course in the morning and to whenever we start our day, and trust that it's going to manifest for us. And you'll see, you'll test this process a time or two. You'll make an intention: I intend that I am happy, that I am healthy, that I am the owner of a new vehicle or whatever, and right away things are manifesting. If your intention is pure and you got lined up with the highest good, you'll see results right away.
Do you think most people need to be in a group setting for intention to work for them?
Not necessarily, George. You can do it alone. If you're, you can. We just say that a group actually magnifies and multiplies the quickness of the manifestation of the intentions. But you can do it alone, and of course, many, many people are. You can take this, take these teachings, and just do them on your own. Sure.
All right. Next up, we go to Lynn in Costa Mesa, California. Hey, Lynn, go ahead.
Your original interview was not exactly happy with my thought on this, but here goes. I am an amazingly positive person, but astonishingly, to the annoyance of Pollyannish theories and my friends. But when it comes especially to health, beyond anything else, actually, I go beyond that, but beyond that, health, you have to not just wish for happy things, you actually have to go down and chase them down and actively chase them down. And hope may bring those remedies into your forefront. That's true. But when it comes to other things about hope, hope is not just sitting back and hoping that the streets, you know, the gangs will go away, or that, you know, I'll have employment. And gosh, I hope that the world, will smile today and be happier. It happens when you are nice to the cash register person, cashier, when you actually pick up a broom and decide to sweep down the street. The lack of action, that annoys me when I don't hear someone saying, we sit down and we all meditate and we hope for something good. Plus, these are the things we actually go out to try to actually manifest them in the living world by our actions. I want to hear that part of your website, where you tell about how you actively get up, then walk away, and the physical body actually attempts to manifest them. Because I know I hear a lot of people in the world complaining about the world. But I don't hear them, like myself, getting up 4 days a week to do like 30 to 40 hours of volunteerism, along with running my business that take a minimum of 40 hours on top of that. I don't hear people doing that. I hear people going, oh, I'm sure tomorrow will be better and it'll be, you know, everything will work out. Well, I get up and I make sure certain aspects happen. And I just don't get the concept of just hoping. Hope is not a single energy level. You have to connect it up with the action. That actually says that you believe in what you're hoping, because you're actually working for something better in the world.
Well, let me tell you something. Yeah. There's somebody there, Tony, who understands this.
Yes, indeed. And let's just chat about that word hope for a minute, because hope, the noun, is a very a sacred word. Hope, faith, charity, to me those are some of my favorite words. But hope, the verb, is something I sort of stay away from. I hope, and especially the adverb, hopefully. When I hear the word hopefully, I cringe, because it implies doubt. If somebody is saying, hopefully I'll do that, you know that they're just doubting that, or hopefully this will happen, you know that there's doubt. So I make a great distinction between whether I'm using the noun or the verb, because they're very different. And so is that, what else would you like to know about that?
Okay, let's take one more call here, then we're out of time. We've got Debbie in Seattle. Go ahead, Debbie.
Hi, Mr. Burroughs. I'm so glad you're having this conversation tonight. I was involved in an intentions movement from a different generation, which was amazing. And I want to know, what has been your most amazing intention come true that you've witnessed?
Oh, my. So many. My email box is full of them, the ones I've seen in my life. But I'll give you a quick example. I was pulling into Redding, California recently, and my van started sputtering, my Dodge van. And so we limped into a mechanic shop. And not only that, but the hood latch broke. So I had multiple issues. And one of the things that I've learned in my life is that when I've got stuff or things going sour or things going wrong in my life, it means something better's on the way to me. So sure enough, the mechanic was fixing the van. There was a snippet on the wall there of a picture of a road trip van that a lady had just put up there, one of those fancy vans with all the bells and whistles and the shower and bed and TV and all that. And I thought, gosh, I intend I have one of those. And there was a phone number. I took one of the little phone numbers things off and stuck it in my pocket. And we got it fixed and went up to the next town, which was Grants Pass, Oregon, one of my favorite towns on the Rogue River there, and went into an intender circle there. And we're talking about showing them how to do an intention circle. And when it came my time to put my intention in the circle, I said, I intend that I have a new, it can be used, van, and then it comes to me freely, easily, and effortlessly. And so we took our break, because you can add freely, easily, and effortlessly.
Only about 20 seconds left, Tone. Go ahead. Okay.
So we took a break. A fellow follows me out, says his name is Pete, and he tells me this. He says, Tony, he says, I just inherited more money than I know what to do with. I'll buy you a van. And I went back to Redding and got the road track.
That's amazing. Thanks so much, Tony. Good luck with your work. Tony's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Get what you want. Up next, we're going to be talking about some artifacts from the Southwest, only like Coast to Coast can. We'll be back.